Hello. Welcome to the Roll Together podcast. Thank you for joining us for these podcast versions of our streamed shows from Twitch. You can always find our schedule of upcoming shows at twitch.tv/RollTogetherRPG/schedule. Please do leave a review, and we look forward to adventuring together.
Talk Together. Thank you for joining us for an evening of talking about Dungeons and Dragons and TTRPGs and mysteriously dancing to no music as we were just doing. I'm Natalie. I'll be your host for tonight, and I will be chatting to the marvelous John, who you can see here. Hello, John. Welcome. Welcome.
Hello.
I'll be asking John questions about his experiences playing TTRPGs. And if you've not tuned into a Talk Together show before now, I'm going to roll a d20 and we're going to let the dice decide which questions to ask. So before we kick off, this stream will run for about an hour, and we're delighted to be sponsored by HeroForge, Ultra Pro and Elderwood Academy, who you can see arrayed above us, and supported by D&D Beyond, Warriors of Waterdeep and Level Up Dice, arrayed below us. You can find us under Roll Together RPG across a multitude of social media platforms, including Patreon. So big thank you to our D20 Club who support us on Patreon. Thank you for making everything we do possible. Our shows are also available as podcasts. If you're listening to this as a podcast, hello, welcome to you. If you would like to listen to this as a podcast, just search for Roll Together RPG on your favorite podcasting app. And if you find your favorite podcasting app does not have us, let us know and we'll sort it out. But we should be everywhere by now. So that's all the important bumf. Hello, John, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm just reflecting on the people in the podcast when they've seen our dancing.
They won't have. Would you like to describe your dancing for those listening?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So it was pretty contemporary in the kind of the Martha Graham tradition, a lot of angles, very mm-hmm. elegant. I think you should describe yours now.
It was mostly Muppet-style flailing, as most of my dancing tends to be. Regular Roll Together watchers will recognize you as Juliet, a lovely paladin in Sean's horror campaign, The Lonely House of Neverwinter. So that's currently running in our Tuesday slot. But to catch everyone else up, could you please remind us of who you are, what you do, maybe run through some of the other characters you've played in our streams?
Absolutely. So I'm John, I might be Richardson on here, Scully. AXA, multiple names, many identities, under Gemini, very hard to pin down. What do I do? It's a very good question. I act and perform, a theatre maker, as many people who find themselves in the world of TTRPGs. I think one of the things that brings us to us is it's a way to have lots of hats and roles and things going on. It hits a lot of buttons for us. So I'm one of those. I also work as a personal assistant to keep the wolf from the door. That's my non-superhero identity, as I think of it.
Everyone's got one.
And husband, cat dad.
Lovely. Great. Love that.
All these important things.
I am also cat parent pretty recently, as of 6 months. And I'm very much enjoying it.
What is their name?
He is called Max, and he is an adorable little void floof.
A nega floof.
Yes. Although he's not snuck into streams because I'm enclosed in my little cupboard under the stairs, so he can't get into here.
I think mine, Maud, has appeared on streams. I think in the Lonely House. So we're having building work done at the moment, so she's confined to the lower quarters. Now she escapes across the roof in some kind of chimney sweep-esque kind of escapade. But I'm pretty sure during the Hall of the Undermountain King, her tail, she's incredibly fluffy. She's Siberian forest cat. So she's just looks like a boom.
Amazing.
And like many very attractive people, she has a terrible personality.
Great.
A lot of biting, a lot of like, fuck you stares. You know, she's a cat.
Yeah.
So in the streams of Roll Together, I kicked things off with a wonderful one-shot, The Escape from the Pyramimic, where I was playing a delightful Sister Belinda.
I loved that character.
Adorable, very nice nun who also was a terrifying vampire with a... you never found out about where her draconic powers came from. In my head, she had a conjoined twin who was a little dragon, but never had the chance to pop out.
Amazing.
So spoilers, but she's dead now, sadly.
But she's dead now. I was going to say, I couldn't quite remember. I was going to say, is it the kind of character that could come back again? But no, she's dead.
Maybe, I mean, like she ended up with a mimic clamped to her face, but she could have eaten the mimic. So I never count her out completely.
I don't know if
you keep in your head like that. The characters who have gone like, oh, is there a way for them to come back? I don't know. And then after that, I was playing Heimlich Stratovarius, the bard, with that canny group of adventurers delving into the Undermountain to face the googly eyes from the twisted imagination of Liz Dark. And now I find myself in another weird body horror twisted imagining. We've got a tie for Roll Together, is what I'm sensing.
Well, you know.
That's my feeling.
We do sometimes delve into more light comedy, but there is always something. Well, I mean, the googly eyes is one of those, I think, like the pickles in Flustered in the Feywild, where it is simultaneously amazingly hilarious, but also horrific.
Yeah, cute and terrifying, which is a lovely place to be.
Yeah.
And that's like, Liz managed that really well. And the pickles equally were,
Did you watch any of the streams live on Twitch with the little pickle emojis?
No, I didn't.
I don't know if they've still got, I don't think they've got them at the moment because they rotate them depending on what streams are on and what's kind of trending. But they were, terrifying, those little pickle emojis. Yeah.
I have to say, I'm not much of a live watcher. I love a podcast, which is why I was wanting to, for our podcast listeners, to spell out the picture of our dancing. I love the pure theatre of the mind, just listening to the voices, imagining the story along. And I just find all your faces too damn distracting.
We're all too beautiful.
Too beautiful.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I work a lot in audio. I'm a voice actor and I produce audio dramas. And yet when I do D&D, I do a lot of visual comedy stuff and facial expressions and goofy stuff that then afterwards I'm like, oh yeah, I should have narrated that better. I apologize to podcast listeners that you're missing out on some of my dumb stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, because I realise the more I do these, the more I realise what a kinesthetic performer I am. I like, get in my body and I'm like, this is lost to a certain view. But then when someone else is having their moment, you can't be being like, oh yeah, I find that quite tense in my lower spine and it makes me curve my back, you know. Well done, streaming audience. You get this extra level of performance and beauty from us all, don't you? I'll say better than that.
Welcome. Right, shall I? I should roll a die, really, shouldn't I?
Let's do it.
Okay. See how it goes. Oh, that's pretty good to start with. Number 18, rolling nice and high. Ooh, who's the best villain you've ever faced in a game?
Ooh.
It doesn't have to be just Roll Together. This could be home games as well.
This will be a home game. Delightful as the... I mean, I don't know what the end villain is in the Lonely House. And the googly eye beholder was a joy, especially getting to smash it. But I'm in an ongoing campaign at the moment, and it's a really it's a body horror thing. It's a campaign run by Red, who plays Milk in various campaigns, and he loves a tentacle. So it's it's a kind of an item, the shape-shifting cats. As cat people, so it's just, it's this, we're in this terrifying vampire city, and there's these ancient elder vampire gods that he's made up from his weird imagination. It's all homebrew, and there's a lot of kind of conjoined cat monsters going on, and we're just and they're really good at taking over people's bodies, so it's like body snatchery, So we're basically fighting the whole city at this point. We can't tell who's been absorbed into this elder consciousness and who hasn't.
Amazing.
It's a great villain because you're just constantly paranoid, which I think is a lovely place to be for drama. We trust each other at the moment.
I was going to say at the moment, but
yeah, well,
who knows if any of you are in cahoots with Reg?
My character did cop and become an IDEM for a bit, but then we managed to get a druid witch to solve it. But yeah, for a while I was playing for the other side, which was a lovely place to be in as well. To be I'm just going along for the moment to kill you. Yeah, that's my favourite villain at the moment.
Amazing. Do you DM as well?
I have tried. I don't think it's in my wheelhouse. I don't know if that's just because I'm lazy and I enjoy being a player so much. I don't know if as an actor you can relate that there's so much joy in playing these characters going along this story. And rather than being the director, having a part in it, I've never DM'd with... I've always DM'd with kind of mates who I'm kind of bringing into the game. So I think I tend to be a bit too controlling and being like, okay, this is what you can do. I tend to railroad. So I've never found like an easygoing relationship with DMing. I should give it another go. But my past experience have been like, don't know if I enjoy it that much. Have you?
Fair enough. Not D&D. So I've DM'd a couple of games here and there. One was Lady Blackbird, which was so fun, but it's kind of a railroaded story.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a one-shot, but we made it last 11 sessions.
One-shot is a lie. I've never played a one-shot to one session, ever.
No. But
apart
I mean,
from on the screen.
Yeah, that particular setting, do you know it?
I don't know.
So, Lady Blackbird is it's great. It's like a steampunky Star Warsy Firefly mashup.
Love it.
And there's pre-gen characters, and there's a bare bones kind of world building and plot, and then it's kind of like, right, this is your goal as a party is to go and meet up with this dreadnought pirate. But yeah, it's just one of those where the potential of the world is so rich.
Mm.
And the players that I was DMing for were so into it that we just ended up doing a lot of world building stuff, and I kind of kept coming up with encounters for them to have on the way, and like, oh, okay, well, you've got that item to help you get there, but you also need to uncover the map and learn how to read it, so let's go on adventures to do that as well. So yeah, that was really fun, but it was apart from like inserting little side quests, it was kind of, we always knew if they had decided, no, we're not going to go meet up with him, I don't know what I would have done. Basically.
There's a thing with one shots, isn't it? I remember the main one I DM'd was this, it's quite a common one shot where you, there's a demon up a mountain that's so covered in poo, you need to take this magic potion, and then you see everything is candy. And it's like funny, it's a simple conceit. But yeah, it has to be railroaded because they can't be like, oh no, we're going to go to the other town instead. Like, there isn't another town. It's not in these 12 sheets of paper I've got.
Yeah.
And I've not world built to that degree. The guys who do, like Chris, my other DMs, Red, the way they constantly, it's like the computer game where the next bit is uploading, and they're just able to do that so quickly. It's, I don't know if it's a skill I have. But I do admire it.
It is a good skill. It's crafting.
You've got it if you're making up all these different characters and different encounters.
I'm going to try. At some point, when I have a bit more brain space, I do want to start putting together a D&D one shot and seeing how I cope. There's just so many different, like, it's the spells. I've said this before in these talk togethers. Like, I've worked my way up to playing wizard because just the sheer amount of spells at higher levels.
I've never played wizard. It's still the one I've not tried because it is so daunting.
Yeah.
And then to be the DM, you've got to know all them and it's all the rules of how the gravity works and all the things. And when, you know, people like Chris, you put it all in their head at all times. I know they do checks as well, but it always feels like it's a beat away. Whereas I know I'd be like, hang on.
Yeah.
And you lose that
But I guess that, I mean, that comes from experience, right? Because yeah. Chris has been doing it for a long time.
At least 2 years, right?
at least.
I that memory as well, I think, helps. I don't know if he's got one. They've got one of those.
Yeah. But I don't know. I've never had that conversation with them. I have to ask. Chris, what's your memory like? I feel like they're not here to defend themselves. But yeah, I do admire the ability to construct. Going back to the question that the dice rolled up, thralled is a new word. threw up. The ability to craft a villain that is enticing and compelling enough that the party the party cares enough.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think most people are used to the convention of like, oh, okay, we've been presented with this villain. Well, we're obviously going to go and fight them at some point. But like I said with Lady Blackbird, that the risk of if the party decides actually we're going to go over there and do that thing instead, I think it's a skill to be able to say, okay, well, I can tie it back into this villain that I've created, or okay, you can do that, but actually it was part of their plan all along. I think it's a skill I want to work on.
Yeah, that the ability to keep all the other parts moving that aren't in, as I think of it, kind of the camera shot at the moment of the party. So I think Red does really well. It's like, we know if we go off and like hang on the gigantic sheep casino that he has, then other shit will have gone down in other parts of the town that we now can't go into, or that the game of it, the consequences of your actions, that's nice from a villain, because it's lovely to explore the world, but sometimes you need a foot on the gas. I feel that with Curse of Strahd, which finished recently. It's like, oh, there's so much more to explore, but we did have to kill the incel vampire.
I mean, no spoilers, I've not played it.
I won't say anything, but obviously you understand the general premise is kill the incel vampire.
Yes.
Yeah, then that's my only spoiler.
Fine.
cool. But enjoy. It's a cracker.
Yeah, this is the other thing as well. I've played D&D with mostly Roll Together. I like occasionally other groups as well, and I'm playing a campaign with my siblings at the moment. But all of it has been homebrew. So I've not played any of the book campaigns yet. So that's something that I think that's also a reason why I've been like diving into looking at the DM's guide and being like, okay, well, if I'm only playing homebrew stuff, I would like to play these at some point. And if no one else is going to DM, maybe I'll do it. I don't know. We'll see.
I think it's a good place to start for DMing. And you can add your flavor on stuff. That's what our DM for Strahd did. He's great at taking an already quite obtuse suggestion and then pushing it to the nth degree, so you end up with wonderful gleeful stuff, and it doesn't have to be just as the book. But there's definitely a security in that, because I think with homebrew world sometimes it can go, you lose control of your crazy baby, and it you can't find the edges of it.
I would have to have lots of spreadsheets, I think. A very like a wiki, or I mean, we've started to build one for Roll Together, because it is lots of homebrew stuff, which is very cool. And I think that's as we go on. I mean, we've been going for over a year now. Things are getting deeper and richer, and we do have little connections between the campaigns. So I think it's going to start becoming essential to have all of that. Anyway, we have. Sorry, what were we going to say?
Oh, no, we. I'm just trying to make this one question last the whole hour. They have me back. I just love the way that stuff does join up, and you're seeing that in the Roll Together world, and these characters are popping up. Like, Vyorik is in the third adventure now, I think. Mm-hmm. It's great. But let's roll on.
All right. Roll that dice. Does it upset you, by the way, that it's grammatically incorrect, or do you not care?
I don't mind.
Okay, good.
I'm very slovenly with grammar and many things.
Oh, amazing. I'm continuing my streak of excellent luck. That was a 20.
Hey!
Which was so exciting that my camera has gone out of focus, as it seems to be wanting to do at the moment. So, 20, which character was the hardest to say goodbye to?
Oof. So I've lost a lot of characters because one of my DMs, the one did Curse of Strahd, the delightful Oliver Clegg, Death by Badger on Twitter, he is hilarious, follow him, is
great,
he's not
handle.
He's not an unfair DM, but he will punish, not punish, but if you and your party make stupid decisions, which the group of people I was playing with, we make a lot of stupid decisions, then the rules of the world are consistent. So you can die a lot. And I have. So I have no, I'm like the Ironborn in Game of Thrones, in that I've died, so I do not fear death. I have no problem like with characters dying. That's fine.
Sure.
I got another 26 in D&D Beyond.
Yeah.
So I don't, it's not any of the dead ones. The ones I really miss are, it's the campaigns that kind of fizzled out. So there's no closure. So I know like out there, there's like, the one I miss the most is a little owl cleric. He's not an owl, but he believes in the god who is an owl. And he's just out there in this city waiting to continue the adventure. And I still have him on my D&D Beyond, and I look at that and I'm like, oh. So maybe he'll find another adventure. But those, I think those are the saddest ones where, for, you know, the real enemy in D&D is scheduling. And you're just like, life changes, some people can't play anymore, and it just stops. Yeah, that's the ones I miss the most.
Yeah. What can you tell us more about your cleric?
He was, he's called Adrian Fickabard. I love a surname with a D&D character. I always like two barrels, ideally a title as well.
No.
He was just, he was very like Neophyte's Journey, very classic, just quite a geeky little Arcana cleric who'd arrived in this mystical city of Red's Imagining, different campaign, same place, same homebrew world. And they were playing a kind of battle royale across this weird city, fight to the death, and his group were thrown together. It was epic, but then we'd just had a big chariot race, we had to hunt and kill another party, and then because of life the game stopped. So yeah, he's the one I miss.
Aww. Well, big love to Adrian. I'm sure he'll come back at some point. I'm gonna roll the dice again. Here we go. Okay, a bit more average this time. 11. Okay. So I don't know, this might have already been answered, but who knows? Who is your favourite character? And this could be, again, like...
Pick one of the babies.
Pick one of your children.
Pick a favourite child.
And raise them above all of the others.
Can I have two?
I'm a generous god.
Right. Go on. Thank you. You're benevolent and I worship at you. Probably my top one, mainly because he annoyed people so much. He was the second character I ever made. I've been reading about warlocks and found them quite fascinating. The thing I love about a warlock is you can have someone who was one moment totally ordinary and the next minute is super ordinary. It's a real kind of like X gene kicking in, Spider-Man bite. Whereas a lot of the other classes, you have to work quite a lot to get that capable. Mm-hmm. Whereas a warlock is just magic. So I love the idea of this guy who was a really good salesman for the charisma. And then somehow he ended up selling timeshares in the Feywild. So he was contracted by an archfey to sell timeshares to people on the material plane in the Feywild. So he was just this slimy, it's based on the kind of telesales people I'd worked with. He was just really annoying, and it was wonderful to play. He was so charismatic, sleazy, got several gnomes he met to sign over their kids. Just a bit of a sleazy bastard. He was lovely. I just have such fond memories of playing him. And the other one, equally terrible, I'm a terrible person, is called Mrs. Peachum, and she's a cross between a kind of craze-style gangster and Mrs. Lovett from Sweeney Todd. So she's like a little 2-foot-tall cockney halfling psychopath, but she keeps a bail hostel full of kids. She gets rid of bodies and pies.
Amazing.
She's like crime gangster S queen. And then she goes on her holidays and she does adventures. So she's like, I'm just doing all my holidays. And then stabs people in the face. I love her. She's a lot of fun as well. They're both terrible people. I enjoy being terrible people.
I was going to say, is Juliet quite a departure then for you to be playing someone? Or is there the hidden depths and secrets?
No. We don't know? So the premise of The Lonely House seems so terrible. I wanted to put someone very pure into it. Into this, what promised to be and is delivering on being an eldritch terror. So that's why she's a redemption cleric as well, because they're not like the clerics who are like, I will not lie, I will not do anything wrong. There's a lot of kind of moral flexibility with a redemption cleric. But they don't want to kill people. They want people to achieve their best, have their potential. So I'm really interested where that story is going to go, and who's behind this house, and can she redeem them? Because she's going to try, because that's her—it's her oath. It's the thing I love and hate about paladins is that you've got this. No other class has four rules that you have to abide by, and the dungeon master can be like, "I think that's against your oath." And you're like, "Oh, damn it! It's broken. Raise zombies." So no, she is very pure. And is a good person, and that's also nice to play. It's nice to play different roles, but the ones that I love a bastard. I just love playing a bastard.
And your two favourite bastards, did they meet you? I mean, you said a lot of your characters have died. Did they meet fitting ends, or did they skip off into the sunset?
Neither of them has died yet. Not active at the moment. Miss Beecham has had her holidays and has gone back to the city where she's going to check on the kids. And Cleef is presumably out there somewhere selling timeshares, but who knows? Maybe he will pop up at some point in the future to annoy us all.
I love that having like a Rolodex of characters just at the ready.
Yeah. Which, from playing with Oliver Clegg, where like we started playing Curse of Strahd, lost my first cleric, then lost my artificer, and then like only got a character that stayed around. I've always got a character, a backup character. I've learned. Always have a backup character, people. Always have a backup character. You never know.
I think this is a rule that I need to learn at some point. I've been very lucky. None of my characters are dead. I mean, don't say it too loud. so far.
Well, this is the great thing about playing Thomas, because Chris was saying at the end of the dragon, contractually these characters cannot die.
No, I know I'm safe. So I mean, we can still have. I mean, we still had very dramatic. Oh, well. Moments, and now we're all worried about getting gems because if we go down again, who knows what's going to happen. But
there are other characters in that game, maybe.
I don't know. I'm not party to any of the discussions Chris has with Ludia about those. As far as I know, we're sticking with the five that we have. So,
One for legal.
Yeah, exactly. But when the dragon incinerated Halberna, I mean, I'd literally said earlier in the game, like I'd made a joke flippantly, like, I mean, contractually, you can't kill us. And then, obviously, when Halberna went down, I mean, spoilers, if you've not watched the last episode of Warriors of Waterdeep, it's been out, 2 weeks now? 3 weeks now? So, sorry. But so Halberna goes down and people are starting to panic. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, but we can't die though. We can't die either. Chris? And of course they had the plan all along. And we'd also made jokes about Mert turning up earlier. Still in the moment, there's always that.
And let it happen and then brought it back. It was lovely.
Masterful.
Just as long as you're all not now like leaping off cliffs, really.
I mean, that's the challenge in series three, right?
I was testing the edges of this universe. Which is what we do when we're in a fantasy universe, right? That's part of the appeal
of it. Exactly. That is the point of it.
I can fly. Did you cast the fly spell? No!
Whee! You know what? Sorry, this is supposed to be about you, but you just reminded me of the audition game sort of that I played when I first was sort of joining what was Adventurers Wanted, I was playing a rogue and a tiefling. And I'd never played a tiefling before, but in my head, I was like, well, they look like Nightcrawler. And I was like, okay, we're in this long sewer tunnel and I can hear people talking at the end of it. I'm just going to crawl along the ceiling and like, and listen to them in the dark. And I think everyone else there who was more experienced was like, what? And Chris was like, have you got spider climb? I was like, what's that? I don't know. But then proceeded to roll a natural one. So so in their benevolence, Chris was like, yeah, well, you do it. You do. You crawl along the ceiling and then immediately land at their feet. I was like, great. Good. Sure, this is fine.
I think I really enjoyed that mix of levels of experience of players, though. My game, one of my games is with some people who don't know many of the rules at all and also don't care. They will, Oliver, our DM, is great, and he'll be like, tell me what you want to do and I'll figure out how it works within the mechanics of the game. And it produces some really creative approaches to stuff. Rather than thinking, you know, like, oh, I know I can do this, and you start doing all the maths in your head and all the stuff that once you start becoming familiar with the universe you can do. There's a real joy and a freedom in that, and I think remembering that and going back to it, because it's great to like max your character and, you know, use your abilities to do 4 million points of damage every hit. But is that what we're here for? We're here to play a game, really.
Yeah.
And you want to play it joyfully and chaotically and beautifully, I think. That's what makes it interesting for me, anyway. I know there's people who love the maths and they love to play it that way, but that's definitely not my preferred style.
Yeah. We're in a shared fantasy universe.
Yeah.
The rules are there to support the question of what do you want to do?
Yeah, totally.
Are there any situations you can think of where you've perhaps pushed, maybe this is one of the ones that's ended in a character death, but you've perhaps pushed things with your DM and gone, I would like to do this. I don't know how, but this is what I'm doing. In that way that we were just kind of talking about.
Oh,
this was not on the approved list of questions.
So. Oh yeah, definitely. Particularly when the part, I can't give a specific example, but I love the kindness of a DM when the party's really in rock bottom and you need a Hail Mary and you're, you know, I know I can do this, but can I do it this way? Or trying to, well, I think it's good to use spells and things as they're written, because otherwise it just becomes a bit of a free-for-all. One of the reasons my husband stopped playing D&D was because he would say, I'm going to do this, and say something that he probably couldn't do, and then he'd roll a one and it'd be like, no, you don't do that. There needs to need to be some rules for us to have the fun, but we also need to be creative within them. But yeah, I can think of loads of times where it's been like, the brown stuff has hit the fan and you're like, can I try doing it this way? I'm like, yeah, you can. But with my other games, it's usually the less rule knowledgeable players who come up with those things. They're the ones who are like, well, I'll just do this. I'm like, oh, that's really good. I can think of one I did the wrong way around, which was my artificer in Strahd. Had been charmed by Strahd, the whole party had. It turned out we'd always full-fish charms, and because we're a group of performers, we loved playing up to that. No, he's great, we love him, he's fantastic. And we'd one person who wasn't charmed. No, he's trying to kill you, it's not good. And my character at the time, who was the female goblin artificer, who was a professor, and she was very academic. I got 4 degrees, thank you. She was great, but she decided to go to the book club with Strahd, and he, of course, drained all of her blood. But at the time, because she was charming, he was like, oh, no, he's a very handsome gentleman. I'll go along with him. It'll be lovely. But yeah, that was it was such a stupid thing to do, but it was so right.
Yeah.
You do it.
Just willingly walk to your death.
Yeah, yeah. Not blocking. Which is, I think, for improvisation, a good thing.
Well, the you can't break the rule of yes and. Them's the laws. I'm going to roll the dice again.
Roll the dice.
Here we go. Okay, we're going down now. This is a 5. Oh, how do you feel? It's a bit more left wing, this one. How do you feel about cosplay? Left field, not left wing. How do you feel about cosplay?
I love it. I encourage all kinds of dressing up. in life generally. The only dalliance I've had with cosplay myself is one of my home games. We at Halloween, we dress up. It's always on Zoom because we've got players here in around the country. Mm-hmm. But it's always lovely on that Halloween game when the camera goes on and you're like, oh, what have you dressed as now? So I've been we've only done it twice because that game's only been going on as long as the pandemic. But I've been a lovely grey firbolg. And then last couple of weeks ago, I was a tree man. So it's a character, a druid I'm playing, I love playing at the moment, who is a Hexblood. But my approach to that is he was a mandrake growing in a witch's garden. And he's just got up and walked away. So he's just this walking plant man.
Amazing. I love that. That's so cool.
He's got the curiousness of a two-year-old with phenomenal eldritch power. It's great. Wow. It's really fun.
This is aside from the cosplay question, but what did you use as a stat block? Their base race?
So the
Hexblood character.
Yeah, the Hexblood character, which just seemed to fit quite well. He's always pulling out bits of tooth and nail. And Hex is great for a druid, because when you're a bear, you can fight hit twice, just get mechanical. It's like, oh, this is tasty. I went and bought some plastic leaves and glued them all over my face. And
nice.
It was cute. I love cosplaying, dressing up. I have been doing it less now because I've got older and my knees are shot. Like a drag queen and a cabaret performer. I just think dress up more. It's great.
Yep.
Get out there, slam on some glitter. Do it. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. It's always been something for me. Like, I mean, for obviously people know, I wear Thomas's little sidies, but I enjoy it for streams and things. When it comes to like cosplaying at conventions and that kind of thing, I love it. I love seeing other people do it. I don't have the time or the money, but I'm always up for dressing up, having a little bit of a play with wigs and costumes and that kind of thing.
Totally.
Have you ever brought any of your nerdiness to your drag?
I don't know if I have. It's kind of, I think this relates to some of the other questions, but I had like a nerdy period. And then that kind of in my youth, in my adolescence, and then that ended with kind of the emergence of my sexuality. I was like, oh, I need to go do this now. I can't possibly be doing all of that. I've got to go to nightclubs in high heels. And then years later, Red was like, do you want to play some Dungeons and Dragons? I used to play that when I was 11. And just some friends started playing it together as a reason to make sure we hung out more. And then I've just fallen back into it so deep. And I was going, I love this so much. Why did I stop? Why did the world stop me? And there was all the anxiety around not being cool, not being accepted. It was a thing I was bullied for. So I kind of rejected it, put it away. And I'm like, now I'm an adult and I can do this and I can do it as much as I want. Although not so much because my husband may divorce me. He's worried about being a D&D widow. but yeah, now able to like really go full throttle in it. Who would a D&D drag as? I might have to, maybe I'll need to do like some kind of, I inherited some costumes from my drag mother, who was really, as one of the first gender non-conforming people I'd met. All the other drag queens at the club I worked at were like big hair and frocks and tits, whereas Storm was kind of like David Bowie meets a drag pirate. And I know David Bowie is already quite a drag
Amazing.
Pirate, but it was like the drag pirate was turned up and was just kind of washing around in all these clinging black outfits, an eye
That's
patch.
Hot.
Yeah, hot. And I've got a couple of her outfits, so maybe I need to come up with some kind of sorcerer character and do a little bit on stream. I'll think on.
Yeah. If you could cosplay as any of your characters that you've already done on the stream, which one do you think... Okay, which one would you... Like, no issues with time or money, which one would you do? Or which one do you think would be easiest?
It would be gorgeous to like be in full plate armor. And Juliet's like around my age. She's a little bit older. She's in her early 40s. But she's hot. And I'd like to be her. Or Sister Belinda, who doesn't love an evil nun.
Exactly. And she was so, delicious, I think, as a character to watch and enjoy. But, yeah.
just channeling Thora Heard the whole time. It was great.
Nice.
Hello, loves.
Hello. I'm here to help. I love a northern old lady character, as people may know.
Anyway, it has been noted.
It has been noted. Although, actually, my favourite, like, I love Valka and I love Sister Belinda, but I think my favourite older northern lady character in all of Roll Together Streams are the nuns that Niall did at the start of Escape from Carceri. Is it that one? Yeah, I think it was. Where they were all just outside having a fag and being like, all right, yes, lovely. I was like, I know those people. I know those women. They're brilliant.
Well, as you like from your the voices you bring to Assassin's Creed Valhalla and so many things, like strong northern women. It's like Juliet is based a bit on some of my aunts. It's just they're great for fantasy. They're powerful, independent characters. It's gorgeous. Yeah, more of them.
A whole
adventure team.
Well, okay. Well, this is something I've been campaigning for a while. is Team Granny one shot?
Yeah.
So at some point, one day.
Problem is, it wouldn't last very long because we'd sort the shit out.
Well, exactly. Right? Like, how many of these things has Valka not been involved in? And I'm like, look, if Valka was there, she'd have pinched people's ears and it would have been over. Right, I've rolled again. And I've rolled a 16. But actually, it's sort of linked from the cosplay question, like, who would you cosplay as? If you could make yourself in D&D, what would you be?
Ooh. I like this question because it feels a bit tricky, because it's not just saying, like, what player would you be? It's what would you be? Which really made me think. It'd be fabulous to be, like, a gold dragon. Or one of the more fun dragons. I think the golden would be too serious. That would be quite cool. I think, and this relates to what power would you like from... So I'll answer that one. I'd love to be a druid. Really enjoying playing a druid at the moment. I love gardening. I love my cat. The power I would take from D&D would be wild shape. To do that twice a day would just be amazing. So I'm just going to fuck off and be a sparrow for a bit. Bye!
Yeah.
Great. So some kind of druid. And I love the idea of the fae, which kind of connects to the drag. I always imagine the fae world as like the clubs of my youth. It's just like this big, big messy disco.
Yeah.
Dangerous, which they were. It was the 90s. But yeah, so that kind of thing.
That hedonism sparkles in a lovely time.
Yeah, some kind of like fae druid. With possibly some draconic heritage. I don't know. I think that's where I'd like to be.
Nice.
Just swigging some mead, having a boogie.
Yeah. I like that. And is that... That's fantasy, John.
Yeah.
What do you think... Obviously, like, the real answer to this question is if you tried to transplant yourself literally into the D&D world, we'd all be villagers, right? We'd all be...
Totally.
Like, that's NPC people.
Probably a commoner is what I would actually yeah. be. And that's the but I'd be having a little daydream like, oh, it'd be nice to be in the Feywild.
Yeah, fair.
I'd probably, what would I be? What do I do now? I'd probably be like, not a cleric in the temple, but like working in that in some capacity, I think, if I'm brutally honest about myself and where I am in my life. Currently training to be a psychotherapist, so maybe right. be like some kind of listening service for like wronged gnolls. Just partly the idea behind Juliet, because I'm doing that at the moment. I was like, oh, and instead of trying to like kill the Ettins, she like tries to get them, she counsels them, and she just yeah. leaves this series of slightly more authentic monsters in her way, speaking from the eye space and stuff like that.
Yeah. We've had a little bit of a run of characters that are kind of like that as well, because we had Sharmini's character in Flustered in the Feywild, who had the rule of, no, we need to offer them a job first, right? We need to give them a chance, please.
Which I love. It's this real rebuttal, because D&D is so wired for fighting. Like, everything is building up to this moment where you kill the thing. So to push against it and be like, no, surely there's more peaceful solutions, which I think that the thing that Roll Together and Chris especially, they really lean into that. There's other ways to solve this. Yeah. I think they were talking about it in the interview where they were talking about Warriors of Waterdeep.
Yeah.
Is that in that game, you know, you go, you clear a room of monsters, but there are other ways to do it, which you guys did so beautifully.
It was a funny one, actually. I mean, Thomas especially is, because he was very lawful good, was very much on the side. Like, even though he is built for fighting and taking all the hits, he's also, the way I've been playing him has kind of lent more and more and more towards that. Well, no, we should, especially if they are keen to talk and they're just trying to get on with their lives, why would we kill them? Why would we attack them? But yeah, it sort of leads to a place where I guess it depends, like doing it on stream for an audience, there's also that little tiny voice in the back of your head going, well, what is interesting for an audience to watch as well? So I would like to think that tense negotiations can be also very interesting and very fraught and like, oh, they're going to make it, that kind of thing. But sometimes you do just want to see people smash things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But find the balance.
For me, I'm quite a dramatic purist, and seeing people suffer, not in the terms of pain, but in like the, you know, the like,
mental anguish.
The classic kind of, you know, moral dilemmas of drama is always more fascinating mm-hmm. than the action.
Yeah.
The moments before the fight, the build up to it, the tension, the do I have to, what am I risking in this situation? That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And that's fun to play. And I think if the player is having fun, the audience is having fun. But I've done too much Lecoq training, so I'm all about pleasure and impulse and all of these kind of things. Boring actor chat. Sorry,
No, not at all. I'm the wrong person to suggest that it's boring actor chat, because my next question, again, off-piste, was going to say, are there any other elements of your training that you think play into your playing of D&D?
That's the main one, pleasure and impulse. I've done a lot of kind of clan training and stuff around that. So just being open, being playful, listening, that's a lot of the game for me. It's weird because as a clown you do say yes no a lot, it's not verboten, but in an improv concept when you're trying to tell a story, that doesn't work so much. But you can accept someone's offer of the reality and still tell them no. It's just you need to take this new gift. I'm really thinking about my training now.
I think that's a really interesting, it's a really interesting concept, because I mean we talk about yes anding and D&D is a form of improv and working together as a team to tell this story, and yes and is a great way of doing that and not blocking off other people's suggestions. But as someone who has trained in this technique, is there a way that you could describe this idea of taking the gift but still saying no and being true to your character, but still kind of taking what the other person is giving you and helping it fly?
Yeah. So it would be, I suppose I'd call it thanks, I hate it, where someone is like, you know, oh, remember that meal we had back in the restaurant? And be like, yes, it was terrible. It's still yes. You're not denying the existence of it, because the blocking would be no, we didn't, and mm-hmm. it just shuts down any growth. Whereas I feel, you know, and particularly with D&D, because we're all trying to get along, we know we've got a goal to achieve, and particularly when it's a shorter stream time, we know we've got to hit these beat points. We don't know what they are, but we know we have to get from A to B, and we know in 4 episodes time we need to have some kind of resolution. So we're less inclined to have conflict. I think conflict is interesting. We don't want it all the time, but no one goes to the theatre to watch people get along and have a nice life. It's not what we want to watch on telly, and I'm gonna put it out there, maybe not what we always want on our D&D streams. It's nice to have a little bit, not loads, and always with good intent of players working together, knowing that they're safe, knowing that they're happy, that there's all guidelines and things, in place so everyone feels safe and agreed. Mm-hmm. But when you can just push each other a little bit, it's beautiful. And it was really nice to watch you guys do it in War is a Waterdeep, where you just find those little edges to push mm-hmm. each other. It's good. It's good theatre. It's good drama.
I'm going to confess my sins. I've not managed to watch the end of episode 2 of The Lonely House of Neverwinter yet. But has Juliet figured out the shit that David's character keeps pushing? All of the little tricks that he keeps trying to, like...
So he popped a little thing in her head, letting her know that he can talk in her head. Now, she heard a voice that she presumed to be the Thunder, who is the one who made her great auntie Dawn turn into a big fiery angel, which is how she got her angelic heritage and faith. So she now knows something is up, and she's bright, she's got a good intelligence score, but she's not done it yet. But then they are in a life-death situation, and they've all kind of creeping flesh viruses. So it's a bit of a, like, is this the time to be like...
Yeah.
Jog on, dickhead. And he's quite charming and handsome, so I don't know if... you know, it felt in good humour. But if he pushes it too much, he'll get a slap. But then probably a pound on the shoulder.
I look forward to saying that. We've got time for a couple more questions. We'll see what else we can squeeze in before we're done.
Let's go.
Let's have a look. Roll that dice. Oh, no, that's another natural 20, which, you know, usually would be very exciting. I know, right? Let's see. Okay, 14. Ooh, this is an interesting one. What is the funniest moment you've experienced in-game?
Oh, I've already kind of alluded to it. It was playing Curse of Strahd with the... I mean, there's so many, but I can't remember them because they all fly by. And at the end of the session, you're left with that wonderful light feeling, mm-hmm. but you can't necessarily, I can't pull out a particular joke. And I also feel D&D games can be a bit like a dream. It's lovely to watch them and be in them. But when you're trying to tell someone afterwards, it's a bit like, oh, I don't quite get it, because there's so much caught up in the energy and the interplay between all the people present. Yeah, to be told it afterwards is like someone being like, oh, I saw this TV show and this happened, it was really funny. Like, oh.
Great.
But I do remember having so much fun and laughing so much when we were charmed and people really lent into the charm rather than being like, oh, don't, you know, trying to find a way out of that. Because it's a really tough situation to be in where you're doing what the Babeg is wanting you to do. But it's such a beautiful motivation as well for a performer to be like, oh, I love you. Yeah. And I'll do whatever you like.
Yeah.
Come on, let's go into his castle. He seems really great. I love his taste in decor. And everyone who got charmed just lent into it so hard. It was hilarious.
I mean, talk about gifts in improv. Like being told, you love that person, but not really, is such a great, like, and sort of not necessarily easy to play, but it's an easy one to sort of hop on board with the okay, I know that this can be funny and also fun, but also
it's
could turn horrific.
Motivation.
Yes,
it's good and strong. It's clear, it's like, you're angry, you're this, you just get to have an emotion, because it, you know, we're so aware that this world of D&D can kill us at any point. Is it a mimic, isn't it? I don't know, is that trapped? We move through it cautiously, I think. So to just be like, you love him and you want to hang out with him. And like, oh, great, I don't have to worry about any of this other stuff now. I can just play that. It's a lot of fun.
Sidebar, now that you've mentioned it, are Red's home games as full of mimics as Escape from the Pyramimic was?
No, because they're full of items, which are these shape-shifting cat creatures.
Right.
But equally kind of... you know, just they're very tentacly shifty. There's been a few mimics, a lot of tabaxi. He loves tabaxi, he loves cats. We fought a whole village of tabaxi. There was a village, and the tabaxi had come in from the hills and taken it over. That was also very funny. We lured them down to the river where there was a river troll, and then we burnt a lot of them in a flour mill. And then the items
in the mill,
they were all hanging out in the mill, and we burnt it. It was. My character was a rogue. He is a bastard. I love him. So yeah, there was less kind of moral Juliet compunction about that. Yeah. Just than the cat. His games are eldritch and terrifying, totally on brand.
Amazing. Right. One more time. Let's go. Yeah. Give us a good number, dice. A 9.
Oh.
Okay, this is actually a really nice one to end on. What advice would you give to a new player?
I think don't be afraid to just say what you want and let the DM or to figure out how to do it. Listen to a few episodes of a stream or a podcast. Listen to how different people play the game. And I learn more listening to different podcasts and streams than reading any rule book, I have to say. I think I picked up all of the D&D knowledge I have generally through osmosis. And it's when I pick a character class and a subclass that I'll sit down and read, like, okay, what happens now? But I'm not really a word learner. I'm a do learner. Enjoy failure. Don't be afraid of getting it wrong and lean into those moments, because they're gonna happen. It's a 20-sided dice, and half of that dice is usually bad for you. So just enjoy those moments. The more you can own them and have fun with them, the more fun you'll have. I know I do. I'd played a game this week. I didn't roll above 10 once, but I had a great time.
Yeah, I love those games where it is delightful to roll lots of 20s and succeed and get to do all of the stuff. But again, a gift, like failing is a gift.
Yeah. And it's like a good play is not someone just succeeding. It's someone who maybe succeeds a bit at the start, they're having a great life and then things go wrong. And it goes up and down. And that's the same as our journey through life, is up and down. Things go good, things go bad. It's richer and there's more contrast in it. Always play the contrast.
Yeah.
Back to time training.
And it can add stuff to the character as well. If I hadn't have failed twice in a row on these rolls, we would never have had the joke of Thomas is super strong but cannot climb, which is now an ongoing thing.
It's amazing how that one thing will then follow you around for the whole of the campaign. I had a tiefling bard in our party who jumped off a cliff, I think thinking that someone had prepared Featherfall.
No one right.
had. But then that just became a thing of like, I don't know if that player is that chaotic. He's pretty chaotic. But it just became like, anywhere there was a ledge, like, hold him down. We don't know what he will do. And it becomes so defining. And again, because we can't, unless you're a total genius, make a whole background for these characters, that we play, these little things, sometimes in the middle of playing a game, something will just occur to me, I'll write it down, like, that's now canon. That little impulse ahead, I was talking about impulses before, like, oh yeah, I really like French fancies. Something will happen, just make it part of the world and absorb it, like a mimic.
Absorb, be a mimic, love it. Wonderful advice. Well, thank you very much, John. This has been delightful. Is there anything coming up that you would like to plug?
No. There is The Lonely House from Neverwinter.
Yes.
But that's already well plugged. And if you're watching this, I'm sure you get all the other tweets and Instagram posts and things about that. I've hopefully got another couple of things coming up with Roll Together. I'm just stretching some new character muscles. That'll be fun. But since the pandemic, a lot of my stuff is shut down. And I'm quite inclined to leave it. Like, I've got rid of a lot of costumes and things. I did a cabaret life drawing show a couple of weeks ago. And until I get booked for another one of those, I'll just be being me, really.
Fair enough. Which
feels enough at the moment.
If people wanted to find you and follow you online, is that something they can do?
They can. I'm at Mrs. John Joe.
I'm sure the mods will be popping it into the
chat
right now. Cheers, mods. Great. So yeah, Lonely House of Neverwinter. We've got two episodes left.
We do.
Is there anything about, I mean, I suppose we don't, I don't want spoilers, but is there anything you wanted to explore with Juliet that you're hoping to come out?
I'm hoping, and it's always tricky in a party because obviously everyone's got little bits of backstory they brought to a DM, and Sean has his own plot he's working through. But I hope she gets put through the ringer and has her values and morals questioned, because that was part of the reason I sent such a pure character into this terrible world, was to sit in that and play it out and be it and see what comes out the other side. Mm-hmm. That felt like the fun thing to do for this. I mean, I love her, but I hope she suffers, because that would be good drama.
Yes, all about the drama. Amazing. And I suppose we'll see if she survives or not.
I hope so. Well, she's about to face down a gibbering mouther, and as the party tank, that could go really badly. But I have, of course, other characters prepared.
As always. Amazing. Well, thank you everyone for joining us and being part of the show. If you enjoyed this, we stream Talk Together every Friday from 6 p.m. till 7 p.m. GMT, and we stream our D&D games on Mondays and Tuesdays 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. GMT. And our Monday slot, we currently have Chris's folk horror campaign, The Reaping of Golden Fields, and they've just had a major reveal about the B-bag of that campaign, and it's pretty epic, so go and catch up if you've not watched that already. And on Tuesdays, we are currently streaming the aforementioned The Lonely House of Neverwinter, DM'd by Sean and featuring John as Juliet. So join in and watch that as well. All of our shows stream at Twitch. All of our streams cross. No. All of our shows stream at twitch.tv/rolltogetherRPG. And the VODs are available immediately after the stream to catch up, or you can find all of our content on YouTube a few days later. And don't forget, you can also enjoy them as a podcast. Hello, podcast listeners. So many thanks once again to our D20 Club on Patreon. Thank you very much. If you'd like to support us and join them and be super cool and awesome as well, you can do so from as little as one of your local currencies per month. And thank you again to all of our sponsors and supporters. And one more thank you to John. And as always, stay classy at the table.